Hello, highly intelligent subterranean mole people and everyone else. Welcome to another fantastic episode of podcast Lost in Games, or the Lost in Games podcast, whichever you prefer. I'm not picky either way. I have a bit of a cold today, so I'm going to try and keep this quick and easy and get right into it. Today we're going to talk about franchises and how certain games will evolve from one thing to another. This was based on a comment made by Taryn in last week's episode about how the Dead Space franchise, in his mind, the order of like what's good and what's not would be 2, then 1, 2 feet of shit, and then 3. Though we later find out that he's never actually played the game before, so what can he really say? He can't have an actual opinion. He's not allowed to, right? He's just making a prejudiced comment, wouldn't we all say? So basically, yeah, and then he compares some other things. There's like this game, 50 feet of shit and doing all this. And it's just, I noticed a pattern in how when we usually get to the third or certain games, we tend to see a worse version of the video game that we once really enjoyed. So I wanted to talk about that and kind of find out where in certain franchises we find the perfect form of these very popular games. This week's episode, by the way, is brought to you by Shiro Cosmetics. If you need any sort of gamer geek or pop culture makeup and eyeliner or eyeshadow or helpful breakdancing gnomes that will wrap your Christmas gifts for you, even though it's January 20th at the time I'm recording this, go to Shiro Cosmetics. They have everything you need. They have like League of Legends eyeshadow, Mockingjay nail polish, and Sherlock contouring powder. I just watched that first episode of Sherlock of BBC. I also watched Imitation Game. I'm starting to become a Benedict Cumberbatch fan. I can't be a Cumberbitch because I'm not a girl. Does that mean I'm a Benedict or something? A Benedict Cumberbitch? It's just a lot of profanity with this name. That's just not right. All right. Well, anyway, let's get into the episode. I'm just rambling now. Enjoy, everybody. I would not want to do karaoke in front of my family. And then try not to have the chair squeak too much either.
Oh, yeah. Just it's easier if you're intoxicated. Yeah.
You might want to move a little closer, otherwise I'm going to be louder. There you go.
Okay.
All right, perfect. I can imagine karaoke. Like, that's the reason why it's a karaoke bar. It's never a karaoke kiosk.
Yeah, I told them they should go to a bar to do karaoke. Because at least you have a crowd to sing to.
Yeah, homemade karaoke is probably one of the more tragic things I can imagine.
Yeah.
Personally?
It's like crying in the shower.
Yeah.
Did it really happen?
Just like, yeah, just pretend, like, yeah, you do it and you're in an atmosphere where it's like, yeah, no one will know about this.
Yeah.
until I talk about it on a podcast.
It takes some of the pressure off. No, wait, were you talking? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't happen then. I was making that up.
Absolutely. A fun fictional story right there. That was good. So essentially, I wanted to play the 50 feet of shit game inspired by what you were talking about last time, because you were talking about how Dead Space 3 was like 2 feet of shit the moment that it gets to 3. And so I kind of wanted to talk about franchises and how games evolve from 1 to 2 to 3 and all that. And so with Dead Space being the initial example, like, why is it buried under 2 feet of shit? Why is the third one? Because we thought 2 was fucking awesome. Yeah. And then 3 was a couple steps back. And I would agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot. I think it's a standard evolution of stuff where as things grow, you have to appeal to a larger audience, but still try to maintain your core group of followers.
Yeah.
So we see that with Mass Effect 3, with the Halo games, where they see what most people are doing, and then they cater to that, and then they leave some people behind. So Dead Space 1 and 2 were horror games. Then you have Dead Space 3 come out, which is like trying to be a horror game, but it's also an action game. And it tries to take the story from Dead Space 2, that type of interactive single-player campaign, and then expand upon it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I didn't play it. But I did look at it intensively to decide not to play it.
Gotcha. And so the 2 feet of shit comment was by just trailers, essentially, and
reviews.
Reviews, yeah. Okay. Because I did think it was a step back. But they evolved logically as far as the character and stuff, because they added a lot more mobility to the main character out of the fact before he was just an engineer and he's crafting and being resourceful and doing all this. Whereas now in the third one, there is a cover-based system as well. You can dodge roll out of the way of certain things, which makes sense. I mean, it's the third game. He's been in these situations twice already. You would think that, like, by the time he gets back after the second game, that his life is all going to be just survival now. It's like, well, I never know when these giant zombie space aliens are going to come to life and attack me.
I should probably start getting to cover.
Yeah, I should probably learn how to take cover and fire from behind there, or maybe practice my dodge rolls, you know?
Can't you go outside in the third game? You're out in the snow, right?
Yeah, but you're on a snow planet.
Right. Did that make it less horror for you?
Not really. I wouldn't say it was less horror, no. Granted, there were moments where it's like you're in the sunlight, and that takes away from the horror aspect. So there are more moments than anything where, because you're, like, this is the first game where you're just on a planet for a large part of the game.
Right.
And so with that, like, and having day and night cycles, there are moments in the day where it's like you're fine, and they try and maintain the horror element of, like, oh, now you're... you can't see anything because there's giant clouds of fog and snow and all this, and then you just hear noises and it's coming at you from all directions.
Interesting, because the dark claustrophobic of the first two games is what really sold me on that.
Yes, the setting is a major proponent to that. So, and that was the thing, is they changed the setting, but the story still kind of worked, in my opinion, because they do explain what's the name? Because there's Unitology is the religion in the game.
Right.
And there is a specific convergence or something like that that they believe in, where it's like they all conform into one being and all that. They explain the concepts behind this religion made up for the game, and it's really cool. So it adds to the story, but we still consider it like subpar compared to two. And so I wanted to also talk about franchises where it's like they actually evolved logic. Like, Far Cry 4 is not the most perfect Far Cry out there.
Right.
Far Cry 3 is that perfect
Far Cry. Right, and Far Cry 4, they had to build on that success and expand to a larger audience.
And they give you way too many weapons, they give you way too much stuff. It is more or less the same game over again, which I'm fine with paying $60 to have an experience that's similar but still different, because I put 50 hours into Far Cry 3, if you give me another Far Cry and it's more or less a lot of the same combat and a lot of the same stuff, I'm going to put another 50 hours because I put the time into the other one. I enjoyed that. What's wrong with having another experience again, in my opinion?
Right. And then there's some games that have been successful in this by keeping that core and then expanding upon it. Fallout's one of them. Mm-hmm. And when Fallout 3 was this, it wasn't huge. It was big, but it wasn't like a Halo-sized following.
Yeah.
And then Fallout 4 came out, and it's all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it has the same HUD. Graphics are marginally better. They're they're much nicer and crisper, but it's not a huge step up.
Because comparatively, we have a different palette. Because if you look at the graphics to, like, Halo 5, like, the graphics in those games are amazing.
Yeah.
Like, say what you want about Halo if you're not a shooter kind of guy at all. The graphics in that and the cutscenes are impeccable.
Yeah. Say what you will about the story and the multiplayer and the campaign, but the graphics...
specifically for 5, and don't knock the camp... you can knock the campaign story, don't knock the gameplay. You and I had a
Oh, no, the gameplay was a ton of fun.
Yeah, gameplay was the best part of Halo 5.
Did I say gameplay? I meant multiplayer.
You said story and campaign. I was
by campaign, specifically story.
Yeah.
Okay. And I wanted to talk about BioShock, too. T-O-O, not number two. That
number
didn't
two.
Really happen to me. Because with BioShock, you had the survival horror game that takes place underwater, claustrophobic atmosphere. Came out, I think, in the same year as Dead Space, or 2 years apart. And it was so successful. It was just this great game and beautiful setting.
Especially because it came out of nowhere. It was a brand new IP that all of a sudden is just like, it's a horror game, it's an action game, it does all these really neat elements, and everyone's like, on it. No one was saying a bad thing about BioShock.
Right. And so then they made BioShock 2, building off of that success for a wider audience, and it didn't do as well.
Well, for that one, and seeing this, this
it was
is
a
this,
different studio, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, different. It was 2K. I think it was the same, same studio. It might have been the same studio as well, but it was a different lead director. Like Ken Levine was the main guy who did BioShock and BioShock Infinite.
Yeah.
He was the story and kind of like the major figurehead of all of it. Whereas number two, it was totally different.
For, he started his own gaming company, didn't he? Because he's not making another BioShock.
Well, I see, and that's where I could be wrong out of the fact that I know Irrational, which is the company I think he runs, is not. But so it might have been a different studio who did too.
I think it was.
Okay. So, and because that would make more sense logically, I don't have the facts right in front of me. But I would say the jump from 1 to 2 is similar to like Far Cry 3 to Far Cry 4, where it is like a direct sequel, where it's like sequelizing at its most generic.
Right.
Where it's like, if you go from Far Cry 3 to Far Cry 4, it's like, oh, now you can have a little helicopter, and you can just zoom around on the map, which takes away a lot of the exploring aspect, unfortunately. You can have a grappling hook, and then you can carry this many grenades and Molotovs and do all this, and it's just expanding on what already exists and trying to make the story work the best it can. Whereas a lot of Far Cry 4, the main thing I'll take away from it is Pagan Min as a character.
Yeah.
I thought he was super fun. And so from BioShock 1 to BioShock 2, it's like, oh, now you are a big daddy, and you can do plasmids and weapons at the same time. And I played through that game, and I had a lot of fun. Like, I won't knock it for, like, it's a good game. It's a decent game. But its original was just so good that everyone put it to a high standard and saying it sucked.
Right.
It's just, comparatively, it sucked. Compared to other games, it's fine. Yeah, it's great. And I find a lot of the moments in the game very forgettable, is the problem.
Right.
Is the, like, at least with Far Cry, I have a big impact that I'm taking away from Pagan Min, the arenas that they added. That was actually a neat idea. There are a couple things that they added to it where it's like, I will remember this and I remember the time that I had. Whereas with BioShock 2, it's like, I beat it twice, I'm pretty sure. And I am just grasping at like very few memories of that game.
Same here. I don't really remember playing BioShock 2.
Mm-hmm.
Far Cry 4, my favorite moments were just having a crossbow and going out and then just hunting.
Yeah.
Like that was, I hadn't seen that in a game before. I never played the third one. But just that type of you go in and you just do whatever you want kind of atmosphere. I mean, you see that in Grand Theft Auto, but it's so varied in Far Cry 4 to me that really sticks with me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the secret ending where you just stay in the castle
really,
for 10 minutes.
That's really neat. And then, and Far Cry 1 and 2 are also really good games, and they evolve in their own ways. And, like, and we, as far as the audience, just letting them know, we're talking about 3 and 4 because 3 is where we see that perfect variation. And BioShock's a very interesting case because it starts out great, goes to 2, and then I think BioShock Infinite is its perfect incarnation of the franchise.
Yeah.
And now that Ken Levine and Irrational are done, publishing rights, I think, are still going to 2K. Yeah. And so they're going to continue BioShock, but they have such a high bar to meet because they basically defined what the game is with BioShock Infinite. So now we're just going to be feeling like we're getting this tacked on material, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, probably a reiteration. Especially because at the end of Infinite, where it's talking about how there's always a lighthouse, there's always a girl, there's always that dragon or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have these infinite reiterations of it. Mm-hmm. I think we could see that possibly in future games, that reiteration of that.
Yeah, and then would you still play them? I mean, living your lifestyle now. Like, if we were in high school, we would definitely play it.
Yeah.
But being the adult people that we are now, we're probably... Like, I don't know. Like, with BioShock Infinite, I got it right away. I beat it right away in one long sitting, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was the summer for me, so I wasn't in school.
Yeah, see, and for me, it's like the moment I got my hands on it, I played it, and I was ready to go.
Yeah.
Whereas with these ones, I'm definitely ready for a wait-and-see kind of moment. These kinds of games kind of dictate how much guys like us will buy games.
Yeah, if we're going to work from home or not.
Yeah. Hey, work from home day. If you catch my drift. Then, and I wanted to bring up a touchy subject for you was Mass Effect.
Right.
Whereas, because you would even acknowledge that a lot of Mass Effect 3 was really good, and it was just the ending that screwed you up.
Yeah.
And so, what would you feel like? Would it be 2 or 3 that's the perfect incarnation for you?
2. Mass Effect 2 is perfect.
Gotcha.
Because it refined the story's arc, like the story arc from the first one.
Combat system is especially major.
Yeah. They added a multiplayer element to 2, which was okay. They perfected it in 3, and I think that's what detracted from the gameplay.
Was there a multiplayer element in 2? I thought the wave-based multiplayer was only in 3.
Then I can't remember. I never played it in the second one. I thought there was.
Gotcha.
But I remember it being really well done in the third one.
Yeah.
Because I played it a lot out of denial from the campaign, hoping I can get like something else out of it.
Gotcha.
And I think that's what detracted from the campaign of the third one, is they spent more resources on the multiplayer to cater to a wider audience.
And now, was there anything... Because I never played the Mass Effect trilogy.
Right.
Was there anything different about gameplay, story, or whatever? Like, story's probably not going to change all that much, but is there anything different gameplay-wise that actually makes it a completely different iteration, rather than Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3 feeling like the same game?
Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3 felt more similar than Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2.
Gotcha.
I think they hit their stride with Mass Effect 2, and then they just built upon that with slight reiterations for 3 in terms of gameplay and how it feels. And they increased character animations, how varied Shepard's animations are, and they added more dialogue, more story elements, except for the end, which is, was kind of baffling for me. But Mass Effect 3 was a really good game right up till the end when you get to Earth. When they finished the second one, they said the third one was going to have so many endings because each game builds upon the previous one with the story, and your choices carry over. And the third one was a testament to that not being true at all.
Yeah.
Because you get to Earth, and you're like, Earth is ravaged by all these species at war. And it's this huge battle, and you get to Earth, and you go through like three or four small battles. Nothing really changes, no matter what you do. And then you get up to the Citadel, you meet this random person who you've never ever met before. He gives you 3 choices. You choose one, the game ends. The animation is the same for all 3 choices, no matter what you did in the previous games or this game, or who you chose to live or die or whatever. And it would have been great if they had made it like a testament to predeterminism, that it doesn't matter what fate has for you. Yeah. Sometimes the universe has a larger picture in mind. It doesn't matter what you choose. But that wasn't it at all. It was lack of planning, I think, and probably lack of resources and timing. Because it's EA.
Well, and that's where...
as you can see, I've thought about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way I would have counteracted that is that... I don't know if you played Spec Ops The Line, but that one has, like, up to 6 endings, depending on what you do. And the thing is, like, it's all based on, like, actions you take during this one kind of cutscene. And so the thing is, it would have been really neat to where it's like, if you're apathetic and you let they do this really long cutscene, and if you're apathetic and you let the game kind of lead you on and do whatever, then that's a sign of like, oh yeah, everything can be predetermined if you let it be. And then you can make these changes in this final cutscene that will alter what they declare is like a set destination and all that. So even though to create infinite endings, I would say, is like a really difficult process, and they promised something that they could not deliver on, just because that amount of complexity I can see is like a big deal. But it would have been cool to say, like, if that main character whom we've never met before goes up to you and says, all your choices don't matter. Everything, I can see the future, and everything has been leading up to this moment. There is nothing that you can do to change any of it. And then during that, you could either believe him and let the destiny come to fruition, or you can commit some sort of action at any, and or different types of actions that would relate based on your decisions in the game or how you react to what he said, and then changes the ending in that way.
Or it doesn't change the ending.
That could be the thing. Spec Ops The Line, it was really neat because they have this huge reveal of this twist ending. And then there's a moment where you can make an action or you can do nothing. If you do nothing, game ends. If you take the action, it takes you to another segment. And during that segment, you could either do nothing or do another action. If you do that action, then you get a different ending. If you do nothing, game ends there. It's like, it was really neat on how they set it up to where you can really do the ending that you feel is right. And when I got the ending that I got to Spec Ops The Line, I was like, this seems exactly what I expected. Like, right. Based on the actions that I chose throughout this game, this is exactly as expected. Whereas with, I looked up all the other endings later, and I was like, yeah, those endings wouldn't fit what I wanted for my character.
It's kind of like, even with, you see with Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, there's various endings, but they all end kind of the same way. At the end of Fallout 3, your character, spoiler, your character dies, no matter what. At the end of Fallout 4, you choose one faction, you have that big metal thing, and you either kill the Institute, the railroad, or whatever.
And see, and I bring this up just out of the fact that story evolution is the, like, I think the way that we can change games as they go to their sequels and evolving decision-making and things like that. Because for Spec Ops, that has no sequel so far. And I don't think there will ever be one. I don't think it's sold enough, but it's a fantastic game. If you can play Spec Ops The Line, do it. But it's a game that deserves a sequel. Telling a story of another group of soldiers during a different mission with similar, like, taking actions and how those actions have repercussions and things like that. It itself is the perfect iteration of that game, and there's nothing they can evolve gameplay-wise or doing whatever. And what really bothers me is games like Call of Duty, where nothing really evolves in the gameplay at all, other than, especially in the campaign specifically.
It's more confusing.
Yeah. The campaign... It's what new set pieces can we do?
Shit can we blow up?
Yeah, what can we blow up where your character's just running through a burning building and, like, so many times you do that. There was one mission where it's like, oh, you're in a jet and you can shoot all these things. And I was like, I don't want to do this. This is a really dumb mission. And I didn't shoot anything and I still beat the mission. I'm like, that. So you're telling me that mission is useless? Yeah. I can totally not shoot anything. Why am I flying a jet through this canyon at all? Why can't the mission just start at the end of that canyon?
Yeah.
And that's what bothers me a lot about these Call of Duty games. And I'm not going to play Black Ops 3 unless someone gives it to me to borrow or whatever. But a lot of these Call of Duty shooters, they're not innovating anymore. And even Brian, he discussed how much he disliked the multiplayer of the latest ones just because they're not introducing anything new.
Compelling.
Yeah. Whereas Titanfall would have been a great evolution to Call of Duty. Because the multiplayer in that was so fun and fresh for me as someone who did multiplayer a long time ago and came back to it specifically kind of like for Titanfall or like the new Halos. And that was so refreshing and so fun and so well-balanced and so cool to be, like, fighting in a giant robot. It was really neat. I think Titanfall is the best version of Call of Duty.
Also has the best campaign of Call of Duty.
Yeah, and so...
There is no campaign.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there is, but no one knows what's going on because it happens while you're playing. Am I supposed to play or watch these guys in the corner of my eye? Oh, jeez, that was so frustrating. But, I think Titanfall 2 is not going to be as popular. Like, they're already working on Titanfall 2, and that's going to come out. And I don't think there's anything that they can add that's going to... I think they're going to ruin it from here on out. Titanfall 1 is probably the best form of itself.
It'll just go down?
It's all downhill, just because anything they add... There's going to be so many new things that they want to add to it and try and make it different that... people are going to find more exploits or more cheap weapons or whatever. It's going to just start to be cumbersome in the same way that Far Cry 4 did.
Right.
Where it's like, now we just have too much.
And I was wondering on that vein if that was going to happen to Saints Row.
Gotcha.
Because Saints Row 4 just went, fuck it, we're going to do whatever. And I don't know if they could have that same success with Saints Row 5, if that is...
Aren't they making a Saints Row 5?
I'm not sure.
I haven't heard any announcements yet. Yeah. And that's where...
Something you would know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard nothing on Saints Row 5. But the thing is, they've launched, like, the Get Out of Hell download pack.
Gotcha.
Which is fighting your way through hell as one of the main characters, Johnny Gat. And so, but that was as an expansion pack to Saints Row 4. So it was something where it's like, we're going to take what we already delivered on with Saints Row 4 and just apply the same stuff to a new setting with a new story and new enemies. And that's how you do a DLC pack, which I think a lot of people have figured out. Where it's like, yes, we are going to do the same thing, but we're just going to reskin a few things and redo this and that. That way, it's another adventure to the thing you already love. That's where my friend Talon loved to call Fallout New Vegas just a very big DLC.
It was the exact same, except it was a DLC, yeah.
And that's where a lot of people would assume that they hit their stride, they figured everything out with Fallout 3, which I would probably agree with. Actually, no. I would say Fallout 4, because there was a lot of things that were annoying in Fallout 3 that I didn't realize I hated until they were out of Fallout 4. And it made Fallout 4 a way better experience than I had than
in Fallout 3. Like weapon degradation.
Weapon degradation was a big one. And adding weapon customization is really a neat feature.
Armor customization.
Yeah, and the thing is, what's neat about, like, we were talking about, like, cumbersome and, like, adding too many things... With Fallout 4, it basically, right out of the gate with all the trailers or whatever, is saying you can do whatever you want. If you don't want to do this, it doesn't affect any of the gameplay.
Yeah.
And you can go on, like, not knowing anything about it, and it'd be totally fine. And that's what I thought was the neat thing. It's like, I didn't do any sort of settlement building.
Neither did
or, I. Exactly. We dodged that. And I'm doing a new character that focuses on all the things that I didn't do, just because I want to see what that's like. And... it's really neat how it doesn't, like, force you to do anything you don't want to. It's like, yeah, it's here, but if you don't want to do it, go on, do everything else. We get it. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
Did you beat the campaign?
Yes, I did.
You were with the Institute?
Yes. Nice. Institute. Yeah.
I actually like that ending. That one was cool.
Gotcha. Do you play Assassin's Creed at all?
Yeah. I played the first two and then Brotherhood, and there was another one, and then I stopped.
Yeah, Revelations.
I stopped after Revelations.
Yeah.
Because I did, like, a playtest. I can't talk about that.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed, well, if the game's released, I think you can talk about it now. But let's not...
Yeah, whatever.
Let's not go down that road. But with Assassin's Creed, I would say that one's an interesting case because this is a giant open-world game that gets a new game every year.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's nuts. Like, you have to devote all your time to playing those games. Like, it's like, I can play Fallout 4... for probably, you know, 6 months. That's half a year of making that my main game to play. And I'm not going to get another one until maybe 6 years from now. Then that's
type of game?
Yeah, or a new Fallout, that is. A new Fallout until, like, 6 years from now. Whereas with Assassin's Creed, if you put, like, 3 months in that game... in about 4 months, another Assassin's Creed is going to be coming out.
Yeah, and the story's going to be longer and
gameplay's more convoluted. Yeah.
They already have horse accents.
They already have like images for the new Assassin's Creed coming out. It's going to be in Egypt.
What year does it take place in?
I don't know. Just
because isn't there one right now that takes place in the Revolutionary time? Or that one already came out?
Well, it was like French Revolution Syndicate.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. That was 1824.
Something like that. I think it takes place in Europe. I know that.
Okay.
And then Revolutionary War, or not, Revolutionary War, that was, Assassin's Creed 3.
Gotcha.
And between there, we also had Assassin's Creed 4 and Assassin's Creed Unity.
Was it
4 Black Unity Flag? Was in France.
Unity was, and 4 was in Black Flag.
Yeah.
See, this is how we know that it's already too confusing.
Absolutely. Like, you can't keep track.
There's numbers, and then there's
so many.
Yeah. And I can't tell you what the story is anymore. I thought the first two, the gameplay, or the story was actually pretty interesting, because you had this guy, present time, instantly someone you can relate to, using that thing to go back into the past and play his ancestor. I thought that was really cool. And it was kind of mysterious because it kind of, you don't know what's going to happen to your character.
I think the perfect form of that story, though, would just be the story of the Assassin's Guild just through time. Like,
I thought that would have been very awesome.
Any present day stuff is just going to be,
I was hoping too much. They would do like, they would go, you know, ancient times, middle age, Revolutionary War, maybe more of 1812, then they go to Europe, then maybe World War II, and then they go to present time, they meet it, and then they go, hey, we made 6 games, it's been 10 years, people are done playing it.
Oh man, it would be so cool if they do a World War II version, and you're an assassin who has to sneak through, like, bunkers and stuff, like, and or eliminate the bunkers during D-Day and stuff like
That'd be awesome.
Would be amazing. You're, like, climbing in vents, you're climbing these walls, and granted, parkour is a major element, and now we're kind of going down, like, the Splinter Cell route and how that we're thinking about it.
But you could also make it where you're in enemy territory, and if you make any noise, then you get found out, so you can't shoot. That would eliminate guns.
Yeah. Or you have to sneak into Berlin and help out the people of Berlin. Oh,
that'd be awesome. See?
Because, I mean, you're in enemy territory, so if you go in guns blazing like you would a shooter, you just get destroyed.
Yeah.
Whereas an assassin in Nazi-controlled Berlin, that would be
quiet, can only climb things at night.
Oh, shit, we're talking about the Saboteur, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, but that was a woman, wasn't it?
No, it was a guy.
It was a guy?
Yeah, but we're talking about a version that might actually work, not one that did not work. Yeah. That's funny. I like that. Well done. Well played.
Thank you.
Now I want to talk about GTA, because we talked a bit on GTA in the last podcast, and I felt 4 was the perfect version of that franchise, and that I actually didn't like 5 all that much.
Really?
Like, 5 was okay, in my opinion.
4 is the one that stuck with me the most.
Yeah.
I thought the gameplay in the 5th one was better. Mm-hmm. And possibly the story, the concept of the story of 5 was better. The execution was better in 4.
Mm-hmm. And that's where Brian, if you were able to join us, I know he would vote for either San Andreas or Vice City.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't think the gameplay is...
holds up.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, it's not even a matter of holds up. It's gameplay comparatively... it definitely evolved into a way better gameplay system, and especially combat.
Yes.
In 4.
Like, holding down buildings in 4, or like,
yeah,
like holding up hospitals.
Yeah.
Was so much fun.
Oh, yeah. And...
or just going into a club with a few friends and then just holding...
yeah, out, doing that,
seeing how long it can last.
Yeah, that was my old game that me and my friends set up. But yeah, the fact that they had, like, a cover system and that a good way to show, like, enemy health as you're aiming. And the AI also becomes a lot more fun to fight.
Yeah.
And the big pivotal thing, like, I remember so many fun combat missions in that. In, like, holding up the bank and then running down the street with a duffel bag of money and just all these cops. Yeah.
Because they... what was the movie Heat? They did that after Heat, and Heat redid that after a true story back in, like, 97, I think. No, 79. One of the two.
Yeah, because GTA was GTA 4 did a good job of reaching out to all these elements of different movies and different parts of pop culture, or even just, like, as you said, it's based off of Heat, which is based off a real thing, so even real instances they would draw from. Then in 5... the missions got way more dull.
Yeah, and there are all these, like, fetch missions. Because they want you to go to the other side of the map.
Yeah.
And there's nothing on the other side of the map.
Yeah. They're like, go here and do this and change your clothes. And here's... they literally have a mission that's all about doing yoga.
Oh my God. My Xbox crashed when I was... I had,
No, you had to do it twice.
Yeah, we got, like, an illegal... my friend had a JTAG Xbox, so we got an illegal copy, like, 3 weeks before it came out.
Gotcha.
And, yeah, I crashed during that mission and had to start over. It's not fun. Wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, that is rough. Because, yeah, and it was missions like that. I was like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You can just say, hey, here's yoga. Come do it whenever you want to. Why would you want to? It has nothing to do with anything in the game.
Hopefully with 6 they'll take that out, because there's got to be a reporting analytics team at the end of that who sees the percentage of players who actually did yoga again.
Yeah.
It's probably got to be like 0.1%.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
Jeez, just a weird 0.1% of the 65 million people that play that game.
That's still a ton of people. 0.00001%.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's million... like, that was a record-breaking game. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just certain things like that. I just couldn't get into GTA 5. Whereas GTA 4, it was so fun that they didn't force you to do anything. They're just like, there's gonna be like,
except the bowling.
Yeah, that's true. There is one mission where you do have to. They really explain dating in that game way too much. Yeah. They're like, so they force you to go on a date, which that one is annoying. But there are other, like, that's so few and far between. As far as, like, you can't say the same thing for GTA 5.
Yeah.
As far as there's boring moment to boring moment, then a good moment, but then boring.
It'd be great in GTA 6 if you could see the technological innovations that we have in that game. Like, there's a Tinder app. Or,
yeah.
That'd be fun. Or, like, a Snapchat. You can send nudes to people.
Oh, jeez. I also thought the three-person... what I was going to say, it was what was really cool on how they explained certain things, and it was very subtle, where it's like, you can take people... Like, if you're going on a date or hanging out with a friend, you can take them to a show. And they only illustrate that because you have a meeting for a mission at a show.
Right.
And then you can take people... I would take people to the comedy clubs all the time, and you'd see actual stand-up by Ricky Gervais and Cat Williams.
In GTA 4?
In GTA 4.
How did I miss that?
Call up a buddy, say we're going to go to a show, and you can take him to a comedy club to watch Ricky Gervais perform in New York.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's awesome, yeah. And they don't force you into that. It's like, that was something I discovered. And you, like, see, you played GTA 4, you didn't even know.
Yeah, I played it. Maybe 100 hours.
Whereas everyone knows that there's fucking yoga in GTA 5.
Perilously.
Yeah. Oh, man. Then,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, they even added onto it, because all their DLC was awesome as well.
GTA 4, yeah. Yeah. The Ballad of Gay Tony.
Lost in the Damned was a big one for me. I thought that was so cool. And they tied into the main plot really well. They added a lot more combat and a lot more cool stuff that makes... Lost in the Damned, I felt like, was great as a standalone thing. Yeah. I felt like I was playing the Sons of Anarchy video game. I was like, I'm on it. This is great.
This is a random question. Did you ever play any Harry Potter games?
No, never.
Oh, man. The second one has a special place in my heart.
Really?
Yeah, because it was only for the PC. It came out a while ago, but you can collect cards of, like, magicians. I loved it.
Uh-huh.
Third one sucked. Fourth one was okay. Fifth one was great.
You played all... Jeez.
I don't know if they made a sixth or seventh one, but the fifth one came out for the Xbox 360.
Okay.
And,
Was it a Kinect game?
No, thank God. I don't think it was. I didn't... But you could use the joystick as a wand to perform spells. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
And I was a completionist back then. Because I didn't have much going on.
I've never been a big fantasy kind of guy. There's very few fantasy that
get Lord of the Rings?
I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings guy.
Neither am I. I actually can't.
Yeah, you were telling me about how you read the books and how you were just like so angry.
I can't believe you listened to me for like an hour.
I was like, this is apparently a very big deal to him. I will let him have this moment.
But the video, the Xbox games were great.
I remember playing two of them. But I never owned them. I always, like, rented them from Blockbuster.
Yeah.
To go old school with
them. I went over to a friend's house and played them.
Yeah. But the main one that is allowed is the Elder Scrolls series.
Oh.
And that's where Skyrim is clearly the newest one that they've released is the pinnacle. And I don't know, with Bethesda, I always feel like they have room to evolve. And, like, they've been so... innovative with all their RPGs that I just think the next one that comes out is also going to be better than Skyrim and it's going to be the perfect form.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a track record for certain studios to build upon their failures and their successes.
Yeah.
We see that with Skyrim. They took, I never really played them, but friends told me there were things wrong with Oblivion that weren't in Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had people like EA and BioWare. Where they did Dragon Age, and Dragon Age 2 was really good, then Dragon Age 3 just did not do that well, I think, or one of the
two. I think it was Dragon Age 2 that didn't do well, and it was Dragon Age Origins that succeeded. Yeah. And then I think the fourth one that exists is Dragon Age Inquisition, if I remember correctly, because I don't play, like I said, don't play fantasy unless it's like Skyrim, usually.
And then you have games like Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. First one made by BioWare. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Then the second one was made by... I forget, but it's not BioWare. It'll come to me.
Yeah, okay.
And then the second one failed a little bit because they ran out of budget, and so the ending was a lot like Mass Effect 3, where it just had the same ending.
Gotcha.
Gameplay was better, though. It's like, it's turn-based. It's strategy, almost.
Oh, okay.
It's an RPG, but you see an enemy, the game pauses, you choose your moves, and then you go for it, which was really fun back then. Now it wouldn't hold up, which is why BioWare made the MMO... and change the gameplay, and they wanted to expand to a wider audience, and I don't know if it succeeded or not, but
yeah.
They spent a lot of money on it.
And that, I don't know why this popped in my head, but Hitman.
Oh, Hitman.
Where I think the perfect form was Blood Money.
And
which was the fourth game.
Yeah, and possibly the next one will be... Have you seen gameplay for that one?
No, I haven't. Looks I actually have,
awesome.
Okay. And that's where even some of the gameplay in 4, it felt like the scoring... They had a scoring system, which I don't know how it got past any sort of, like, audience testing. Just because I felt like it controlled how you played. Because for anyone who hasn't played Hitman Absolution... Is that, like, you get scores based on, like, how good of an assassin you are. And so, if you kill someone and then leave them, like, lying in the ground, even if they are, like, tucked in another room or whatever, it subtracts, like, 1,000 points or whatever. There was, like, such a negative point system that every time it felt negative, I was like, well, am I doing something wrong?
Yeah.
And the most fun version I played is me just going around. If there's a bad guy and I have no moral problems in killing him, just kill the bad guy, take what I need from him, leave him right there. It's like I'm going to be leaving this crime scene anyway.
Yeah, there's a few different ways to play that game.
Yeah.
And the connotation between point system and how you play is off.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand it. It pigeonholed you into playing the game a certain way.
Yeah.
When they specifically... They specifically, like, steered away from that. They're like, there's various ways to do this mission. You could drop something, you could do something accidental, you could just be quiet. But then they gave you negative points for doing things that you weren't supposed to do. And it drew away from the open worldness of
Whereas with Blood Money, the game before that one, which I think is the perfect form, is it had a stealth rating and a violence rating.
Yeah.
And which is perfect. It's like, are you stealthy or are you violent? Or are you both stealthy and non-violent? And that was it, is even though you could kill people in a violent way, if you didn't get caught and no one noticed your violence or anything, you can still get a non-violent rating. It's like, yeah, you were very stealthy with your kills, so way to go. And I got, like, a bunch of really... I enjoyed that. I was, like, getting these really cool, like, oh, you got professional, you got silent assassin rating,
yeah.
You got all this. And that motivated me to play more. I was like, oh, my playstyle is awesome. And it even, like, you could even admit where it's like, if I burst open through a door with a shotgun and just start blowing people away, I'm going to get a high violence rating. There was never an instance where it's like, I shouldn't be that high of a violence rating. That's bullshit. It's like, no, I totally agree with this. Where's the, Hitman Absolution.
Yeah.
So many problems with that game.
Especially, I hated the staging portions where it was like, you went through one part of the level, then another part. Hitman Blood Money is like, this is your map.
Yeah, that is definitely the better way to go. I didn't hate the staging portions of Hitman Absolution, but the open map of just, here's your start, figure out how you're going to assassinate your target, that is the best form of that game. Yeah. I really want them to go back to that.
They are. And the maps are huge in Hitman Absolution.
Of course they are.
Yeah, so I'm so looking forward to that. When we're done with this, I'll have to show you.
All right, gameplay. Yeah, you got it.
Very cool.
And then we can even talk a little bit about fighting games. Like, have you played Mortal Kombat? At all?
Only with Nico when we were at the store.
Okay, because, yeah, Mortal Kombat has evolved in great ways in the fact that, like, even since 1992, I think they've only ever gotten better. Granted, like, the one that came out, like, 6 years ago now, I think, it's it's just titled Mortal Kombat. It was the 9th one that they released.
Jesus.
That one is great because it deviates from the rest of them and it evolves on, like, what is popular in fighting games now and how they can tailor it to their own style and do whatever. And so at the time, I was like, this is the best form of this game. This is perfect. And then Mortal Kombat X came out and I was like, no, this is the perfect form of this game. And it doesn't have to come out every year with something new. It's just like... We're going to set the stage of, like, what we want to do, how are we going to improve on it, and somehow they managed to improve on everything in really neat ways that I totally agree with. So, and I guess I can just bring that up because you don't play fighting games all that
much. Yeah, I could just agree with you and nod and be like, yep, I can play.
Thanks, Taryn!
Yeah. It's just, the moral support you need.
You're just like, good eye, way to go, man. Great observation that you really like
Couldn't
Mortal Kombat X.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. Splinter Cell.
Oh, I wanted to get to that.
Yeah.
Conviction was amazing.
Conviction probably...
The co-op for me was amazing.
I would say Conviction is probably the best form of that game.
Yeah.
Granted...
But you couldn't drag bodies. It took away some of the stealth.
Mm-hmm.
But what it added was... it weighed more than what they took away.
Mm-hmm.
It was a net positive.
Yeah. With, the thing was, is, Blacklist is a great game. Like, it's fantastic. But it feels like, the Far Cry 3 to Far Cry 4 thing, where it's like, we struck gold with conviction. What more can we add on? And so they give you tons of available weapons. They give you tons of gadgets that you can carry around. But the really neat thing was that you're able to customize your stealth outfit, like your combat outfit. And you could even tailor it to being more of the assault, the Panther, which is like killing assault, or pure silence.
Right.
And I thought that was really neat. And there was just something about the story. Granted, both stories are kind of off. I might actually go with Blacklist being the best one.
Oh.
I don't know why. It's kind of difficult to say, because they both are great in their own respects, in the fact that Sam Fisher is a way better character in Conviction,
right,
versus Blacklist. Blacklist, in my opinion, really should have been... Did you ever play that one?
No, it's on my list, though.
It really should have been a reboot of the franchise. But the fact that it's a continuation just makes me feel like it's something different entirely.
Right. Well, they have a different voice actor, too.
It's a different voice actor. Sam Fisher looks younger than he did in the game before.
Right.
And it just, yeah, I don't know. There's just certain things about it that it's like, I really disagree with, like, certain decisions that were made. And it kind of affects my view of the franchise as a whole. But I'm going to have to say that, like, Blacklist, in my eyes, is the best reboot of... the best unofficial reboot of the series.
Wow. Did you want to talk about Halo?
Yeah, let's talk about
Halo. What's your favorite Halo?
That's a really good question.
What's your least favorite Halo? Maybe that's a better question.
Least favorite Halo? I might have to say Halo 3 might be my least favorite.
Really?
Halo...
Including Halo 5?
See, and that's the thing, is that the gameplay of 5 is so good.
It's super
amazing. And my issue with 3 is that it feels very Call of Duty in 3.
Yeah.
Because...
But they were also lacking essential... I'll let you finish, but like couldn't sprint...
Yeah, and that's such a big part of it, is because I have played all of Halo 3 very recently, since we played Halo 5 together.
Right.
And there's certain things, because it feels like it's that Call of Duty thing of connecting set piece to set piece, and just like, you're going to fight a Scarab in this portion, then there's a Flood level, then there's Covenant level, then there's a Flood level, then you fight two Scarabs, and then you fight more Flood.
And the worst Flood episode ever.
And the thing was, that was the least amount of, like, story and character. It's kind of the same issue that I would have with, like, these two-parter movies that I've been having, where it's, like, Mockingjay and Mockingjay Part 2, where it's, like... And unfortunately, like, I'm a huge Marvel fan, and they're going to be doing the Infinity Wars and Infinity Wars Part 2. I really hope that Infinity Wars Part 2 doesn't have this problem I'm about to talk about, but Fallout 3 is... Or Halo 3 is just all ending. It's just... There's nothing new happening. There's nothing...
They go to the Ark.
Yeah, they do, but I mean, even when I was playing it the first time, like, if you have to be 100% focused on what people are saying in order to figure out what all is going on and why the Ark exists and what the Ark is doing and how it all makes sense and why the end level looks exactly the same. Like, because for me, when I was first playing it back in high school, I was like, is this the same ring that we blew up before? And it wasn't until recently I was like, oh, it's a extra ring that exists in the event of a ring being destroyed from the first
one.
Which
is the one you destroyed.
Yeah. Exactly, which is why the ending looks like the same as the level that from the end of the first one, or just in the first one, I should say.
Yeah.
And so that's a complicated thing. Pretty much all the Halos are good.
Yeah.
Halo Reach is close to being one of my least favorite. But that one... But the thing is, I don't really dislike any of the Halo games. Yeah. I like them all, really. And I'm going to have to say the perfect version might be Halo 4. in my opinion.
Halo 4, okay.
Yeah, that might be the perfect version out of the fact that that one feels so different from the rest of them. It was the first one to really amp up the characterization of Cortana and Chief and their relationship together. And I feel like that's the game that stands best on its own. Because it even has the big boss fight at the end with the Didact. The Didact was such a badass character.
Yeah.
And I feel like on its own, it works way better as a video game and progressively works your way up. Similar to like the first one. It's like my two favorite would have to be Halo 1 and Halo 4.
I think my favorite would be Halo 1. I thought it was going to be Halo 2, but then I thought of everything wrong with Halo 2. Probably Halo 1.
What's wrong with Halo 2?
I think they introduced too many things. Mm-hmm. Because they added the Brutes, which had a place in Halo 2 and then Halo 3, then dropped off completely. They had the whole Covenant thing, which was cool, but they tacked it on. The Arbiter thing, mm-hmm. which was cool, but I felt like they were adding too many things, and then they ended on a cliffhanger. There were a lot of missions, and most of them were small. Mm-hmm. Some of the gameplay was off. I felt like the stuff that they added didn't compensate for what it was lacking.
Yeah.
But going like Halo 2 had a really good story, I think, mm-hmm. Compared to other Halo games, because Halo 3, as you said, was like all conclusion. Halo 1 had a really good story, but it was kind of on the surface level.
Yeah.
And then Halo Reach had the potential to have such a great resounding story, because mm-hmm. it had the lore of the books to build upon it. And they're like, hey, instead of focusing on the characters in the book, we're going to focus on the small team who had to get Cortana to the ship and to get to Chief. And Reach is a huge battle in the Halo universe where the Covenant attack this huge planet. And it takes place in the space. They destroy cities. They glass a planet. And we focus the whole story, whole campaign, on six characters who are doomed to die.
Yeah.
In a very remote part of Reach. So it didn't feel like it was Reach. It felt like it was something else. And I think the expectation versus the reality is what drew me away from it.
I think the best way Reach could have been executed was that each mission is actually an anthology of a different is a different character.
That would have been awesome.
And each mission ends with a character dying or discovering something new. And you can pick up audio logs that connect the plots or anything.
Yeah.
And there is probably a neat way that you can connect a whole plot in here. But that makes it more than just a war game. At right. that point, where it's just like, yeah, get Cortana to the yeah. ship by the end and do all this. It makes it about the people on this planet and the destruction of that planet.
Right, and if you do that, you possibly alienate your wide audience, which you can't do.
Yeah, which, I mean, yeah, because that goes to, like, I just did a podcast, an argue cast with Alex about Star Wars.
Yeah.
And we talk about how there are certain risks that it's like, as much as he didn't like certain things, it's like there's certain risks that they can't take because then they alienate this whole audience.
Oh, yeah. I was talking to you about this.
Exactly. And Halo's the same way. It's like, it would be the Dead Space 3 argument. If you take too many risks and depart too much from what people expect, that's where you get a bad video game.
Yeah. I think with Star Wars, it's probably the perfect reboot of the franchise. I call it a reboot because it's been like 10 years and the prequel sucked.
Yeah.
They didn't suck. They,
it's been
expectation versus reality.
It's been roughly 30 years since the last good Star Wars movie.
Right. And even that one was kind of departing from what people had thought Star Wars was, because you have the Ewoks, you have the Death yeah. Star 2. It's all becoming kind of...
Well, and the thing was, is with Star Wars, the way I view it is that everyone kind of puts it on this high horse of just like of being this really amazing thing, of this great team coming together and making this really cool story, and it's the story that they've always wanted to tell, and it's amazing how it can stand the test of time, when a lot of the decisions that they make for those movies are actually like based on greed or certain other things, and that George Lucas is not responsible for a lot of it. It wasn't a one man's vision for the original trilogy,
oh, yeah.
but it was for the prequels, which is tragic.
Right. Yeah, that's what really sucked, is because he directed the first one, New Hope, and then
he directed and co-wrote.
Yeah, then he produced the fifth and sixth one.
Yeah, and he wrote the story to the sixth one. He did not, it does not say written by George Lucas anywhere in Empire Strikes Back.
Right, because it was the guy, I forget what his name is, but he wrote this one, Force Awakens.
Oh, gotcha.
It's like A-R-D-N-T, and I can't pronounce it, and I'm not going to try. But yeah, and then George...
Art.
Yeah, something like that. Something like then 20 years later, George Lucas is like, you know what? I'm going to write them. I'm going to direct them. I have a film studio. No one's going to tell me no because they have put me on this pedestal.
Yeah.
So you have all these talented people making this movie that's George Lucas's vision. Yeah. And George Lucas is making these decisions, yeah. and they can't say no to him because yeah. he is this pedestal that they put him on.
And see, and if you watch some of the like behind the scenes stuff, he talks about like he's showing people, he's like, you really got to do this because Jar Jar Binks is gonna piece this whole thing together. Like this, like he relied so heavily on Jar Jar Binks just working, and that's what happens when you give him one. Whereas, like if you watch behind the scenes stuff on like the original trilogy. He is, like, worn out and exhausted and stressed, and it's way more of a collaboration of him, the studio, the people that are working on the effects, and it's way more, it's not just him. It's not what can George Lucas do to make this get off the ground, it's how does everyone get this off the ground and make it work.
Right, and what made George Lucas so successful is he retained the merchandising rights in the originals.
Yeah.
So he made $1 billion on all the toys. Mm-hmm.
And that's where, when it goes back to that thing I was saying about, like, certain greed aspects of the original trilogy, is yeah. Han Solo was supposed to be a character that died somewhere in the original trilogy.
Right.
And Harrison Ford...
I think he rewrote the script in the sixth one to kill himself, to kill his character off.
Yeah, but Harrison Ford famously said... I don't think George Lucas saw a future in dead Han Solo toys.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it was then rewritten so Han Solo could live so they can make more Han Solo merchandise.
Yeah.
And it's similar to, like, that's why the Ewoks exist, is because they wanted something that was cute and can be sold as toys and all that.
To kids.
Yeah. The word Ewok is never mentioned in the movie, and we only know that because the toys exist. Right. Like, that was the whole thing.
Yeah, and that's why Jar Jar Binks, and that's why perhaps, because George Lucas was a world builder. And that really came out in the prequels. Mm-hmm. You don't see varied worlds in the originals. You see three planets. I think Cloud City, Dagobah, mm-hmm. Tatooine. You don't even see the one that gets blown up. I forget the name.
Yeah.
Alderaan.
Well, and see, and that was just it, is like, even Marvel movies can suffer from the same thing, where it's like Iron Man 3. Like, the reason why he does the house party protocol at the end and never anywhere else in the movie, when it's totally logical that he could have done that, but then he brings in like 20 Iron Man suits because then they can make toys off of these 20 Iron Man suits yeah. that he had like 10-second scenes on,
right?
And
you also have to one up the previous one,
and the nice thing about Star Wars Force Awakens is I've had two different friends say, like, where are all these other ships? Like, there's TIE fighters and then there's X-Wings. How come there's no A-Wings or Y-Wing bombers or anything like that? And the yeah. Y-Wing bombers were in, like, A New Hope. Like, those are classic ships. And he's like, where are these? And I was like, well, at least they're not, like... shoving new stuff down our throat to make more toys. I mean, at least you can tell that intent's not there. Otherwise, they would have thrown them in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's make toys off of these ships. And this ship that we saw, let's make a Greg Grunberg toy, because he was in that show Heroes, and now he's here. I'm sure he's a toy somewhere.
Yeah, there were a few issues I had with Force Awakens, and...
we'll save that for another time.
Yeah.
Anyway, video games. Halo. So you would say that Halo has done nothing but get worse since number one.
I would say it's gotten worse. I would say that...
So you said your favorite is the first, but what's the perfect form of Halo?
Man, I played so much multiplayer of Halo 3 while I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And then Halo 4, I really didn't play that much. I would say ODST is too much of a departure from actual Halo for me to consider it.
I say that's the Joss Whedon directed version of Halo.
it's the noir version
yeah.
of it, and it was such a wide departure from what actually people saw Halo to be that mm-hmm. I put it as a standalone.
It really is a good standalone. It's another one of those games where it's like the best extended. It's a good extended DLC of Halo 3.
Yeah.
And not enough changes in the gameplay to make it feel like it's different than that. Granted, its name is Halo 3 ODST.
Yeah.
So, they are very well aware of that.
The gameplay in Halo 5 was the best. I think the story was the best in number 2. Number 4, it was the best reboot because it was a different studio.
Yeah.
Halo 3 had a combination of a lot of things. I don't know which one's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Halo 1. only because I have such memorable moments from that when I was a kid playing it. I played that cartographer mission so many times. I can't tell you how many times I played that.
And to be fair, I played tons of multiplayer in Reach and Halo 3. I liked Reach a bit more, if I remember correctly.
The Reach multiplayer was really good, because you had the power-ups.
And when I say that Halo 4, I think, is the best form of Halo, it's specifically as a campaign kind of thing. Just because now I don't really play games for their multiplayer anymore. And the way I see Halo is how it first came out, where it's like, its real purpose was to tell a really cool campaign story, and then you can do four player split screen if you wanted to. Whereas campaign was the focus when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really neat when Halo 4 came out that it was like, wow, this feels like a way really campaign focused game.
Yeah.
Whereas it didn't seem that. Seem that way with Halo 5.
Yeah, they really drew away from that.
It seems like they were trying, but
they were marketing for the campaign.
I just don't think it executed well.
Yeah, it did not.
It did not execute properly, or at least in a way that I liked.
The pinnacle of that campaign was the fight scene between Chief and Locke,
which happened way too early.
Yeah, and then it never came back to that. They saw each other again. And was like, hey, we're on the same team now. Like, and they're like, cool,
high five,
yeah, bam. Bro. And I was in the bathroom when that scene came on, and I came in, and you guys were like, I was gone for like 5 seconds, and I came back, and you're like, oh yeah, we're teams again. That's fucking weird.
Yeah, it was really ridiculous how much time we got. Oh wow, we're already at like an hour. Jeez. And we basically covered everything that I wanted to talk about.
So, I got one last thing.
Oh, bring it up.
I was thinking, what would be a good Last of Us sequel?
Oh jeez, yeah, that one's gonna be difficult to do. Mainly because... Yeah, especially the way I see it, that's so hard to do. And that's where I know they're doing a sequel, like, and that's a thing where it's like, there's been tons of rumors and everything, but they would be dumb not to, because it was like one of the best-selling PlayStation games to come out. So, the best way to do that, obviously the story's going to be great, because the narrative of the whole thing is what really did it for the first game. And I would say the best way to do the story would be to do it without a sequel in mind, similar to how they did the first one.
Okay.
Whereas, like, I really don't think there was a sequel in mind. It was just kind of this really neat story. I don't want to spoil it, because I know people are listening that I don't want them to know the ending. Caitlin, specifically.
Oh, yeah.
She would be very upset. She wants to play that game. It's really cool. She knows how much I like it. And she's like, yeah, I want to play it, too. I'm like... You're an amazing person. So,
I liked how you plugged her her business at the beginning of the previous podcast.
I don't know, I'll probably do it again too.
Yeah,
it's like about 57 minutes in, I will reference my girlfriend who runs Shiro Cosmetics to get all your cosmetic needs.
Do you need blank?
Get cosmetics. Yeah, Shiro Cosmetics.
Shiro Cosmetics.
Yeah.
You should have shirts.
Yeah, Shiro Cosmetics.
For our podcast, of course.
Yeah, of course. For the totally visual podcast. But the best way to do the story is to, you know...
I think a spinoff. Maybe not focus on Joel and Ellie.
Joel and Ellie, yeah.
But somewhere else in the world.
That could be good.
That way you don't have to worry about it being a sequelized version of The Last of Us. It would be a standalone.
Yeah.
In and of itself.
That would be cool. I would really... that would actually be very interesting to see. Because there is so much going on. And, like, they travel, like, across America in the first... They travel from Boston to Colorado.
In 4 seasons. That's why I like how they broke up the story.
Yeah, and they broke it up into 4 seasons. That was really cool.
Shout out to the hotel.
Fuck off. But, I would say that would probably be really cool. They're definitely going to go with Joel and Ellie again, just because Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson, it's ridiculous not to go with those guys again. They are fucking phenomenal. I mean, they're even doing a Last of Us movie, which is going to draw heavily from, you know, the first game and all that. As far as expanding the gameplay, I don't know, like, because the gameplay fits so well into the world and the story and the setting. It just, as well as, like, you can only work with these small components that you're able to just scavenge. And that's where I would be worried for the gameplay, as far as I know people will either rip on it for being not different enough from the first one, or it's going to do the Far Cry problem where it's going to add too much.
Right. Yeah. That could be it. Or they might detract from the horror aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Because there were some scary moments in The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically when you get to the clickers. And every time I would fight a clicker and it would come at me and just grab my neck and kill me.
Yeah, it's a horrifying thing every time.
Yeah, I looked away. I was like, ah!
Yeah, and the inhumanity of, like, choking a guy out. Like, yeah. And he's just clawing at you. It's like, it's brutal.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is just how you make it through the game, man. But, yeah, it would be interesting. I have a feeling they may change the setting again, which would be neat. They would either... So, here, let's basically craft a Last of Us sequel, like the elements of what it would make the sequel. I would say, in my opinion, it would be a new setting, and I'm going to draw from you and say a new set of characters and, like, their understanding. If we follow them and their understanding of humanity and what it's like to live in this world and their point of view, then that setting can tailor to new elements that are used for combat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's in more desert setting, or if it's, like, what if it's up in Alaska, and it's always fucking cold, and, right. Or maybe, we're in a place that has, like, it shows more of nature coming back, and now animals are a component to it, where it's like, you fight a grizzly bear, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of, I mean, now it's kind of, like, becoming a little bit more Tomb Raider, now that I describe it.
Or Far Cry-ish.
Yeah. Or Far Cry-ish. But, yeah, I have a feeling, like, that's one thing that I could see a sequel being. It won't be that. None of what I said will be true, but that's a thing that I can see happening. If they wanted to do, like, a Last of Us colon other people that are also the last.
Well, The Last of Us is not inclusive to only Joel and Ellie. It's us. That's a plural.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Joe and Ellie and me, the player. That's us. That's us. Not you. You're dead in that world.
Yeah, I'd be like the first day guy.
Yeah.
I'd be looking around like, what the hell is everyone running from?
Yeah.
Boom.
Just, where's the cat? And then...
I asked too many questions early on.
Yeah.
Where's the cat?
Someone's like, you need to run now. But why do I have to run? It's like, it's just,
why do I even have to run?
Clicker attack.
Yeah, just boom. Down. I'd be that guy.
Yeah.
Don't be him.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed that episode. We really enjoyed making it. Please leave a comment on the website or on iTunes. Just let us know how we're doing and let us know how we can improve the show. Let us know if we're swearing too much. And if we are, fuck off. And if we aren't, then thanks, motherfucker. I just really like swearing, and swearing is fun. Well, I hope you all learned something from this episode. And if you guys have any topics that you want us to talk about, send them our way through the website in the comment section, as well as comments on it. Just comment. That's really that's the main point I'm trying to get across here. Just comment. Just be an asshole on the internet that comments on things. Because... it'll make this show better. I know it sounds weird, but it makes sense. Thank you. Goodbye.